From WBUR Boston, I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. For over 15 years, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones have developed a style of music all their own. A blue-bop mix of bluegrass and jazz, even a little bit of classical. Flecktones band leader and 8-time Grammy winner Bela Fleck is addicted to experimentation and innovation, pushing his music and banjo playing often into uncharted musical waters. The band's new album, The Hidden Land, takes the Flecktones back to their roots of composition and improvisation. At the heart, as always, there is Bela on banjo, playing with an expressiveness all his own. This hour on point, banjoist extraordinaire Bela Fleck. You can join the conversation. Are you a Flecktones fan? What about their music? And Bela Fleck's banjo moves you. And if you think you know banjo music, but you don't know Bela Fleck, you're in for a treat. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining me now from Nashville is Bela Fleck. He's been nominated for his 21st Grammy, and over the years he's received nominations in more categories than anyone in Grammy history. He is back touring this year with the Flecktones in cities across the country, including Lexington, Kentucky, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and New York City. His new CD is The Hidden Land. And Bela Fleck, welcome. What a pleasure to have you.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's really a pleasure. And I got to say, your new CD is just fabulous.
I'm glad.
Yeah, it's been in my car now for about the last 10 days. And when I first heard it, I had the pleasure of taking a nice long drive from Boston up to New Hampshire. So I had a whole sort of hour and a half to, and it really sort of struck me almost as a meditation. It was just lovely. And congratulations and thank you.
I'm really, really glad you like it. It's such an interesting process when you make records, because especially in this case, the record comes out a year after you finished recording it. And you have all these other experiences, then you kind of come back to it, and then you can almost experience it fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yourselves as musicians.
I'd love you to talk a little bit about Hidden Land. It's your 11th album. How did it come about? What were you trying to achieve with this CD?
Well, actually, the Flecktones took last year off. So in 2004, we were trying to we were thinking about what we'd want to have happen when we came back together in 2006, which we just did. Is this getting too convoluted already? But anyway, we decided to make this record a quartet record before we took our break. All through 2004, we were practicing on tour, which is that's where the music comes together for us at sound checks. When we have time, when we're doing, you know, 20 dates in a row, we have sound check every day and we work on new tunes. So we got it all recorded by November, and then we took a year off and did different things. And now it just came out after we just came back. Mm.
Now, you recorded in your home studio, and I'm reading that the sort of core principle of recording was that it's just the four of you, Victor Wooten on bass, mm-hmm. Future Man on drumitar. We'll talk about what the drumitar is later, and Jeff Coffin on saxophone. But the core principle was no extra parts in the studio, all playable live. Why was that so important to you?
Well, that was sort of the rule we had when the band first started in 1988. I guess we made our first record, and it was we wanted people to know that we were playing it all, because a lot of times it sounded like more than us, and that was because Victor would sometimes be playing a bass line with one hand and then bring his right hand up the neck and start playing counterparts, or I might be playing a banjo part, electric banjo part, and have a synthesizer going underneath that I was running with a hold pedal or MIDI. At that time, Howard Levy would play keyboards with one hand and play the harmonica with another hand. And Future Man, it sounded like he was doing drums and percussion at once, but it was all happening at once. And so it was important to us at that time for people to know that this is what we sounded. This is really us, not a bunch of guys overdubbing 10 of themselves in the studio. And then over the years, we got away from that for a while, and we the first record we made with Jeff Coffin, Left of Cool, we actually all added extra selves. You know, if I wanted to do three banjos in harmony, I would do them. If Vic wanted to do a main bass and then stereo harmony basses, he could do that. If Jeff wanted to do a horn section. And that record, the rule was we just all had to come from us. But we could do anything we wanted.
Sure.
And we did. And we didn't actually do that much. It's funny. We liked it being mostly what we really played live. But then the next few records had tons and tons of guests, and it almost became a community effort where we were welcoming all of these, unique and fun musicians into our scene and making the Flecktones records where something cool would happen, and it didn't necessarily have to be always even about us so much. Like, one time we had Branford and Jeff do a duet,
right.
Branford Marsalis and Jeff Coughlin,
right.
Yeah, which was fun. Or we have Nickel Creek and the Flecktones play together as a group, or Chieftains and the Flecktones.
Before we get too deep into this hour, mm-hmm. we should definitely give people a chance to hear some music. I know you've got your banjo there in Nashville.
Oh, I think so.
Sounds lovely. Now, what are you going to do for us? You're going to do the whistle tune, which is the last track on the Hidden Land. You want to talk about it first a little bit?
Sure. It's really a banjo tune. Sometimes these tunes are composed for the group, and sometimes they're just things that happen on the banjo, and then I show it to the band, and this is the whole song really is on the banjo. So I'll just play it for you.
Excellent. Bela Fleck doing the whistle tune from his new CD, The Hidden Land. Bela Fleck, that was wonderful.
Thanks.
There's such a range of stuff on this new CD. Fair to say that tune might represent sort of the most traditional sort of country music sound, folk sound on the
definitely.
CD.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, it's probably the most atypical thing I could have played to represent this record, but it just happens to sit good on the banjo, and it's fun to play.
And talk about, because it has a, I mean, the melody, of course, is there and recognizable, but on the album, it's, I mean, you've got the Flecktones playing with you. How does that change the sound?
Well, this is one of the cases where I pretty much play what I just played, although when we got the whistle on there, the penny whistle, I was able to not play some of the melodies and go to more of a support role.
Yeah, it has.
And look for counter melodies and answers.
Yeah, the whistle adds a really sort of pretty mournful tone to it. We're going to come back. We're going to take calls from our listeners. We've already got a lot of people, Bela, who are lining up and want to ask you questions and talk to you. They can join this conversation by calling 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What do you hear in the banjo of Bela Fleck? We're going to take a short break. We're going to listen to a little bit of music from Bela Fleck's new record, The Hidden Land, and come back and take your calls in a moment. This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with banjo virtuoso Bela Fleck. Here's the opening track, a Bach fugue from his new album with the Flecktones, The Hidden Land. Bach fugue from the new CD entitled The Hidden Land from Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. You can join the conversation. What questions do you have for banjo great Bela Fleck? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining me again from Nashville is Bela Fleck. And Bela, I'd love to talk to you about this Bach fugue. Can you describe how that came about and why you featured this classical music piece as the first track on the CD?
Yeah, actually, it had a lot to do with my good friend Edgar Meyer, who encouraged me to do Bach all along, and I just love it. And we've been looking. I like to go over to Edgar's, and the first thing he does. Usually, we're supposed to work on something else, but all he wants to do is sit in front of the piano and play through Bach stuff for me. Say, hey, have you ever heard this one? Have you ever heard this one? Like, of course, I haven't heard it. Play it, you know. And it's great. I mean, so anyway, we've been looking for one that the Flecktones could do for a while. And I brought this one to the band, and we did it some at soundcheck, and we weren't sure it was going to work out, but when we got in the studio, we were able to make it happen. And
what works neat about this particular piece for the Flecktones? And how do you describe what works?
I don't know. It's an intuitive thing for me when I hear them played on a piano, for instance, and I go, wow, there's just something I like about this, and I could imagine about it. But actually, Edgar's the one who said, I think this would be good for the band, and you know, Bach hadn't ever written anything that I didn't think was great, so I went for it.
Well, it's great. And again, as I said before, you know, the CD goes through a wonderful range of music. The piece you played live for us a moment ago is a sort of traditional folk sounding piece and begins with this Bach piece. And in between, there's jazz, there's sort of Eastern tinged music. It just runs the range of all of the interests that seem to capture you and your career on this CD. Well, let's take some calls. We have Dave, who's calling from Clarence, New York. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What's on your mind?
Well, it's a thrill to be able to talk to you. I've seen the Flecktones several times here at UB. The most exciting time was back at Hamilton College when they were playing the chapel there, we got to the show late, and the usher had us sit down on the floor in front of that little wooden stanchion that's in front of the first pew. Basically, we were 5-6 feet off the stage, and at the end of the show, I stood up, took one step, and shook Victor Wooten's hand.
That's great. That's great.
I haven't washed my hand since. But I play bass, and my drummer and I were there, and of course, Future Man played the wooden box in the wastebasket for us all to admire. He set the guitar drum down for a little while. And I guess my question is, when you're looking for that fourth player for your soloist, are you searching for a sound, like, in the instrument, like it's going to be wind, or it's going to be brass, or it's going to be a keyboard, or are you looking for a personality, somebody that understands the music that you're playing, and then they just happen to bring their acts along with them?
Well, you know, we were looking for somebody for a long time. Howard Levy was a hard guy to replace because he was just such an incredible musician. He played keyboards incredibly, and he played harmonica, and the harmonica was kind of the voice of the band. So, like, you're right on it, because we had to find a new voice, and we went through a lot of guests and a lot of different people before we found Jeff Coffin. And Jeff joined about 9 years ago, so he's the guy now. But what I'm always looking for is something to counteract all of the fast notes. It needs to be an instrument that that has long tones. It could even be a human voice, except that could become too ordinary. I hate to put it that way, but it could become more standard in most cases, unless it was, you know, Bobby McFerrin or an Indian singer or something very different. But no, we're looking for either maybe a violin or a wind instrument, something that can really sing on top of these busy notes. Yeah.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
Dave, thanks.
Sure, thanks for asking.
Dave, thanks for the call. 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to talk to Bela Fleck, the banjo virtuoso and leader of the Flecktones. Bela, you said last year you took a year off, and this was a break from the touring that you do a lot of year after year after year. What did you do in that year, and what did you discover, and what came out of that year?
Well, it was an incredible year. It was the busiest year I've had in my life, and it wasn't really a year off. It was more of a time when the Flecktones weren't in gear. Mm-hmm. And I went to Africa for a month and recorded an album and shot a movie there, a documentary of my experiences in Uganda, Tanzania, Gambia, and Mali. Part of it was exploring, looking for the roots of the banjo, and part of it was just finding great music to get involved with. Mm. And then I had a bluegrass group with Casey Dreesen and Brian Sutton, two phenomenal musicians, and then I had a jazz-oriented group with Stanley Clark and Jean-Luc Ponty. And then I toured with Edgar Meyer for about a month, and Zakir Hussain, a tabla virtuoso, joined us. And then I went to China for about a month with Abigail Washburn. And then I played with Bill Evans, a jazz sax player, and Vinnie Caliuta. And I finished mixing and editing the Flecktones album that you're listening to. So it was the busiest year I've ever had.
Yeah, I guess I can see why calling it a year off was not the right choice of terms. I want to talk to you about one of the cuts in particular on The Hidden Land, and that is Chennai. I think I'm pronouncing that right. It has a sort of Eastern tinge to it. It's a very beautiful piece. I'd love to just play it for a bit and then have you talk about it. Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you.
That's Chennai, a cut off The Hidden Land, the new CD by Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. It's just a wonderful tune. Can you talk a little bit about it? Where does the influence come from? It's just so pretty.
Well, this flute melody that you're hearing right now is where the song started. And again, this is one of the great things about Jeff that you can really hear on this record, is that he's willing to play but very good at playing all of these instruments, but he's willing to play whatever instrument he can play that makes the band sound different.
And this is Jeff Coffin. Right?
Jeff Coffin, who's really a fantastic tenor sax player, alto, plays clarinet on some songs. Here he's playing flute. So he brought this melody that you're hearing right now, and we just started jamming on it several years ago, and it never quite made it on stage for a long time, but gradually it did, and if you want to fade it out, I'll tell you about the introduction a little bit.
Yeah, let's fade this out slowly. And
the introduction is a raga that I learned from Sandeep Burman, who's a great tabla player I was playing with. And if you hear my banjo, you'll hear a... That's the scale that the introduction is all based on, which gives you a lot of really neat stuff.
And tell me about that scale. How many notes are in that scale?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven notes, and then it repeats. It's a weird little number because it's got the root, the flat second, major third, flat fifth, fifth, flat sixth, major seventh, root. And it's a classic Indian rag, I guess. I would be afraid to say too much about it out of ignorance, but all I know is it was like a toy to me. I just loved to play on it, so I had the idea of doing an introduction, a free introduction where I could just play around with that scale. And then Future Man started doing some throat singing, which he learned
Future.
To do.
Oh, that's Future Man doing the throat singing. Wow.
Yeah, where in the past we had this great Tuvan singer singing with us on some records. Actually, everybody but me in the Flecktones can throat sing, and I think maybe Jeff is throat singing too. I think there's a couple of them doing different ones, but it was all happening live while people were playing bowls and drones were going on that we'd started before we started playing this.
Bela, I want to get a couple more of our callers in who are patiently waiting. Joe is calling from Boston. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, sure. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Bela about his compositions. So many of them take. Just follow these odd paths and very interesting paths with a bar of 7 here, a bar of 3, followed by a bar of 5. And I wanted to ask if there's a conscious effort to stay away from 4-4 sometimes, or if that's just the way it sounds in his head.
I think the odd meters are kind of fun. And when I first started playing, when I was listening to a lot of music as a teenager, it seemed to be what was going on. Like if you heard the music of the day, it would be maybe Yes was playing. There was a bunch of odd time signatures, and Return to Forever with Chick Corea was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And I just thought that was what you did. I thought that was normal. In fact, I was surprised when I finally started playing with some jazz musicians that wasn't standard. Like for instance, Jeff grew up, went to a jazz school and came out of it and really hadn't played that much in odd meters. But for me and Victor and Future Man, who came up in the fusion era, it's the most natural thing to sit around and play in 7 and see what happens. And then when I started playing with Indian musicians, same thing. I mean, they're playing in signatures that I wouldn't even dream of attempting. And they're playing in such deep ways. We usually do them in sort of obvious ways. In other words, more like Dave Brubeck, where you can hear the... Like that's 5, that's really outlining the 5. But when you get into Indian music, they're not outlining it for, 20, 30 measures or something, but then they always come out on the downbeat. So it's a whole other art.
Bela, I'm so curious to, very general question about the banjo. Does it turn out that the banjo is so adaptable to all these different genres? Because, I think the average music listener can be forgiven for thinking of the banjo as limited to traditional and folk and those kinds of music, but you have pushed it into so many different genres. Does it adapt well to that?
Actually, it really does.
I mean, it does to my ear. That's not the question. But in terms of, for a musician to do that, I'm asking how well it adapts.
It's been natural for me, and I don't know why. But the truth is the banjo has been through so many evolutions in its checkered history, from being in the very beginning of jazz with Louis Armstrong and people like that, and Jelly Roll Morton, to being, the music of the slaves coming up and classic music being played in the... in the what they called classic music, which was sort of pop music of the day, and then moving into the four string jazz styles and then bluegrass and old time, and gosh, there's just so many. But if you go to Morocco, they play banjos over there.
Really?
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Talk to you, too, about what you discovered in Africa, but I don't want to be greedy about this. I want to get some of our callers in. Sanders is calling from Shreveport, Louisiana. Sanders, what's on your mind?
Bela, I just wanted to ask you, what is a syntax drumitar?
tell me where that question comes from, Sanders. I mean, help our listeners out here.
It was an interesting instrument on one of his albums, I think played by Future Man.
Yeah.
Right. And it's on this one. It's on this this album, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been on every album that we've made. And in the beginning, that was all he played in our group. That was, and it, what it is an electronic instrument that triggers drums, but it triggers them manually. And there's no really great way to say this simply, but he's got these sensors on it, and when he taps them, drum sounds come out. He's got them all over this instrument, and he uses his fingertips to play these piezo crystals, and they trigger drum sounds. So if he wants to play the snare, he hits one trigger, and the lighter he plays it, the lighter it is, and the harder he plays it, the harder it is. And by some incredible genius effort, he's created an actual musical instrument out of this thing that makes real music. And of course, it starts with him being an incredible drummer. But he's one of the few guys I know that does electronic drumming where it just sounds completely natural and musical. It doesn't sound like it's one step removed from music. So, I mean, I wouldn't have been looking for an electronic drummer. I just wanted somebody great to play with, and he was that. And then it just became a fascinating thing for people that he could stand up face-to-face with me playing his drums, where normally the drummer is locked behind a drum kit and never can move around the stage. And over recent years, he's started playing his acoustic stuff as well. So sometimes he'll be wearing the drumitar, which is super heavy, by the way, and playing it with one hand while holding a drumstick and playing cymbals and triggering a kick with his foot at the same time. He's multi-dexterous.
Thanks for the call, Sanders. We're talking this hour with Bela Fleck about his new CD with the Flecktones, The Hidden Land. Some call him the premier banjo player in the world. Others credit him with reinventing the image and the sound of the banjo. You can join the conversation. What do you hear in the Bela Fleck and the Flecktone sound? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here's Weed Whacker from The Hidden Land. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be back after a short break.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, and by Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, Bicon.com.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with banjo great Bela Fleck. His new album with the Flecktones is The Hidden Land. You can join the conversation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining me from Nashville is Bela Fleck. And Bela, improvisation is such a part of your performance that you can hear it on the album, your new album, The Hidden Land. You've got your banjo there. I'm wondering if we could ask you to just play for 2 or 3 minutes, whatever comes to your mind, and then we'll take some more questions from our listeners.
Okay.
Bela Fleck playing live from a studio in Nashville, Tennessee, with us now on Point. Bela, I wanted to ask you about your trip to Africa. You said you went there to explore the roots of the banjo. Can you talk about that? What did you find?
I did find some roots, especially in Gambia, an instrument called the akanting that they play in a style that is very similar to the old-time frailing clawhammer style. It's a three-stringed instrument, and It seemed like they were playing the music that the slaves would have been playing still.
Interesting. And what does that sound like? I mean, can you just give me a sense of that?
Well, I'm not a good frailer, but I'll make an embarrassing attempt. That's the sound of frailing by a very, very poor frailer, which is a great art, by the way. I wish I could do it. But it's an extension of that, or actually what came before that is the style that they play in. Mm.
And what did you find out about African music? I mean, did you have an opportunity to collaborate with people down there?
And what
did you discover?
God, I've collaborated with people every day, and I lived in towns and stayed at people's houses and recorded in all kinds of crazy places. And, I don't know. I mean, I think it would be a bit presumptuous to think I could get it. I for some reason I thought it would be, some of it might be easier than it actually was, which was pretty stupid on my part. But there were certain tunes where I was playing along and I thought I knew where the beat was, and everybody seemed to be very happy, but then I looked at their feet and they were tapping in a completely different part of the beat than I thought we were, where I thought it was pretty much some kind of a jig, but it wasn't at all. It was all off by one. And at some point, I remember calling home and moaning about it to my girlfriend and saying, I don't know, I don't think I can learn it and play it the way they're doing it. And she said, well, you know, that would be a lot to expect. Why don't you just play it that sounds in a way that sounds good and feels right to you, and don't worry about it. And that's what I ended up doing, is just having to sort of go with my instincts. And now that I'm going through all these tapes, I've edited about 19 of the pieces already, which is way less than half of what I recorded. I'm finding that I did okay. You know, it sounds good, and I didn't actually have to carry it or understand it all the time to make good music with them. And then sometimes I did. Sometimes I really got it.
Are we going to hear these tapes? Are these tapes going to come out and make up a CD at some point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Mm-hmm. Look forward to that.
So it'll probably be a good about a year from now. Hmm. I think that'll probably be the right interval, and it'll take that long to finish. And also, there is a film. I had a three-camera shoot going for a lot of it, and it's with really great people, a great crew, and you know, we brought this multi-track recording equipment. Now it's in smaller boxes. You can actually take it over. We had backup systems, and we were recording out in the middle of fields and in people's houses. And
Fascinating.
In the middle of towns. It was really, it's a pretty remarkable project.
Let's go to a couple of callers. Ian is calling from Toronto. Hi, Ian.
Hi. Actually, I'd just like to say I'm calling from Ottawa, but that's okay.
Oh, Ottawa. So sorry.
That's all right. Well, I'd just like to give you the story of the first time I heard Bela play.
Please.
It was last June, and I had to make the choice between going to see Bela play and going to my senior prom.
Oh, my God.
That sounds like an easy choice to me.
It was an easy choice. Now, the question I'd like to ask is that in your album Music for Two, where you did that work with Edgar Meyer, it came with a DVD that showed you and Meyer as you toured. And what I saw was that Edgar seemed to have a very close connection with his instrument. And I was wondering if you had that same sort of connection with your banjo, or if your banjos were just sort of like things you could put one down and pick up another one, or if there was one particular instrument that you loved more than others.
Yeah, well, I got really lucky because I got this banjo. I'm playing it right now. And by the way, you're right. Edgar is in love with that bass, and I think it loves him too. And I love both of them. But it's a great thing when a musician bonds with an instrument because it becomes a really emotional part of them. It's how they connect to the world of music in an emotional way is that instrument. And this banjo is that for me too. I got it in 1981 from Mandolin Brothers, and it had been sitting in a basement half full of water actually. In fact, when you open up the banjo and look inside, there's water marks. But it's one of those great banjos from the 30s that just the same family that Earl Scruggs' Gibson Granada is from. It's called a Style 75 because it cost $75 in those days, and I don't even want to tell you what it's worth now. But I've gotten several of these old banjos. I'm looking for one that would get me through if something ever happened to this one because this is the one that I've bonded with, and I keep playing them, and I keep buying them and thinking they might work out, and nothing has ever turned out to fill the niche that this banjo has for me. And it's just sweet all the way up and down the neck, and even the high register is warm, or at least by banjo standards. And I love it.
Mm. Ian, thanks for the call. Otis is calling from Warren, Rhode Island. Hello, Otis.
Hi. How you doing?
Very well.
Gee, I had a question regarding like practicing and... how much time per day do you put in, Bela, at your banjo? You know, I mean, given that you're playing concerts and, you know, practicing and so on and so forth, is there a regular schedule that you keep up?
Thanks for the question. I'm not as good at practicing a lot as I used to be, and part of it is what happens when I come off the road. And I'm home, I'm usually working on album projects, and I'm down in the basement in my studio editing and mixing for sometimes weeks. So, like, for instance, the Flecktones just played a whole bunch, and my hands got really good and strong. And then I came home, and now it's been a week, and I picked up my banjo last night thinking, oh, I got to play this morning on the radio. I better start playing. And so I feel a little shaky. But I usually play the banjo more to sort of write or when I'm preparing for a tour and I get nervous thinking I'm not going to be able to play this stuff. But what happens on the road is we do, you know, an hour and a half of playing at soundcheck and often 2 to 3 hours in the show. So that's four and a half hours of playing every day. And that's at least 150 days a year. So it takes care of a lot of the technical aspects of just making sure the banjo is in my hands enough of the time all year. And then sometimes those breaks make me really fresh. When I pick it up, suddenly I have a bunch of ideas. So it's a funny balance. I wish I had more time to just play and practice and develop new techniques, but I tend to spend it more on other musical pursuits.
Bela, I'm wondering if, for our listeners who may not know your whole story, if you could just talk a little bit about how your love affair with a banjo started. What got you hooked?
Sure. I first heard the Beverly Hillbillies theme when I was a kid in my grandparents' house, and they let me and my brother watch TV in their bedroom one unusually late one morning, and Beverly Hillbillies rerun was on, and that banjo came on, and holy cow.
Really? That got you?
It took my head off. Yeah, it was.
And you were a guitar
thing.
Player then, is that correct?
No, I wasn't playing anything.
I
would have been just, you know, maybe 4 or 5, maybe 6 at the most, maybe I think 5. And I remember my older brother was sitting, we were watching together, and it had no impact on him at all. And I said, hey, wait, it's going to come back at the end, and then you'll see what I'm talking about. And he heard it, and he said, I guess it's okay. But for me, it was a revelation. And, this was in Queens, New York, so it wasn't a typical thing. There wasn't any banjo in my family. And it just sort of stayed dormant in my head. I just remember that experience. And then when Dueling Banjos came out when I was 14, all of a sudden I got real excited about it again. And I remember trying to learn that song, getting my friends to remember the parts and going home and trying to figure it out on the organ when I was saying, hey, you remember this part. And I had another friend, you remember this part. And coming home and trying to figure it out on the organ and not getting very far. But then the weekend before high school started, I went up to visit my grandfather, who at this point lived in Peekskill, New York. And when I got there, there was a banjo sitting there. And it was he had picked it up at a garage sale and just thought I might be interested in it, because at that point I was dabbling with guitar very unsuccessfully. And I just picked that thing up and I never put it down. It was just like turning on the juice.
Wow. Yeah. And who were the folks that really provided mentorship for you when you really picked up that banjo seriously and made a commitment to it?
Three guys in particular, banjo players. One was Eric Darling, who formerly played with the Weavers, who's kind of coming from a folk banjo style. And then he pointed me towards Mark Horowitz, who's a great banjo player who lived in Staten Island. I think he still does. And then he moved me on to Tony Trischka, who was sort of the reigning wild banjo player of the time and still one of the most incredible banjo players that I know. And he became my teacher at that point. So then after that, I had to learn from people that weren't banjo players, because that was the music I was interested in, was stuff that was played on other instruments. And banjo players didn't tend to know it. In fact, people didn't really play the scales and the modes and arpeggios that you needed to know to play jazz or classical music and stuff like that.
1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, to talk to Bela Fleck. Paul is calling from Cedar Falls, Iowa. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I just had a real quick story and then kind of a question. I actually first heard, was introduced to Bela Fleck because I heard a percussion ensemble do an arrangement of UFO Tofu. It was like a nine-piece percussion with... they actually had a steel drum, or I'm not sure that's the right name, and marimba and all that. And that was how I was first introduced to it. And then, so that's always been one of my favorite songs. And I just wanted to ask you just what was kind of the inspiration, because I know someone had said that, like, the name UFO Tofu is a palindrome and that there are musical phrases within the song that are palindromes.
So. Yeah. Yeah, wow, that's a good question. I would have loved to hear them play that tune, because it's one of the hardest things we ever played. And one of the reasons is because of all of the palindromes. I had written this pretty simple, pleasant tune on the banjo. Well, not simple, but fairly pleasant and normal. And we had a friend who was doing a lot of palindromes, a guy named Baby Gramps, and we all got into palindromes. And then I thought, hey, what if we took this middle section, which was like a very complicated thing in multimeters, almost like a Bach thing, and played it backwards after playing it forwards. And so we sat around for a while and figured out how to do that. And then gradually we started building other palindromes to stick in the tune. And gradually it became the title song of that album. But it was one of the more complex things we tried around that time.
Paul, thanks for the call. Let's try to fit at least one more call in here. Bob is calling from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I saw Bela play way back when he first started with Newgrass Revival. And when he first played, I saw him on the stage. Apparently, he'd only been playing with him just for a short time. He basically just stood still, didn't move. But man, he was absolutely fabulous on the banjo. And then I saw him about a year and a half later, and he was all over the stage, just like Sam Bush is always all over the stage. I was just wondering about his influences of what made him suddenly come alive on the stage. Was it Sam Bush or just other people he played with? It just seemed they didn't stand still. They were all over.
Great question, Bob. Thanks.
Yeah, I was trying to get some girls, you know. No, I have no idea. All I can think of is that before I joined Newgrass Revival, I was stuck to a microphone. And in all the bands I was in, you had to stay within 3 or 4 inches of a stationary microphone to be heard. But when I joined Newgrass Revival, it was the first time I plugged in and I was on a cable. And everybody was encouraged to be free. And when I've seen film of myself, even today, I'm sort of puzzled by how odd it looks to me that I move around and stuff. But, you know, I don't shake uncontrollably, but I do walk around. And if the music I've seen shots of myself stepping from foot to foot for like 20 minutes straight in a concert, and I just don't understand what that's about either. But, you know, when you unchain a beast, you never know what it's going to do.
Bela Fleck, what's next? What are you doing now? What can we look forward to in the next few months or the coming year?
Sure. Well, the Flecktones are at it, and we're having a great time playing together again and learning the music that we played a year ago on this album, which is already kind of going to a new place. Like, it's already growing and morphing into new stuff. So we're looking forward to doing a lot of dates this year. And then while we're not working, I'm writing a concerto with Edgar and Zakir Hussain for the Nashville Symphony. I'm editing the African album and film, and working on a duet tour for next year with Chick Corea, which I'm really excited about. And I think it's going to just keep on developing from there. There's a very good chance I may be in Tibet for a month performing before the end of the year, and it's just continuing to roll along in a crazy
way. Well, I wish you all the luck in the world, and thank you so much for coming in. It's been such a pleasure hearing your music.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for The Hidden Land.
Sure.
And that's Bela Fleck talking to us from Nashville, Tennessee. He is his new CD, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, The Hidden Land, is out now. For more about Bela Fleck and where he'll be touring with the Flecktones in the coming months, go to our website, onpointradio.org. Here's Plod in the House from Bela Fleck and the Flecktones, The Hidden Land. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook, who'll be back on Monday. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.